him in an annoying wave of dizziness. Exhaustion, dehydration, and heat are never a winning combination for my body.
You're such a centenarian. Perhaps my kind will not be such killjoys. Perhaps they will feast as they see fit. Perhaps they will... Ooh, what is that?
A mammoth red-horned tortoise, and absolutely not. The shell will embed between your teeth, and I will not carry you and a festering tortoise shell. Get back here! His voice fades as they fly out of range.
Zayden tenses the second we step off the drained stone and onto the strip of grass that separates the pit from the occupied marble patio leading into the palace's dining room.
I'm all right, he assures me as we reach the group.
We fill in the empty places in the small circle, putting me next to Halden, who somehow manages to still look regal and haughty in a crumpled infantry uniform. I wince when the rising sun glints off the golden royal insignia beneath his name tags, catching me in the eye, and quickly look down at the austere black of my flight jacket. I've never worn one made for actual combat before, only training. There's no name tag, no patches, nothing beyond my hair to give away who I might be if I fall behind enemy lines. Only 2 4-pointed stars indicating my rank as a second-year cadet.
There's the boy, Takaris grins at Drake, then glances over the rest of us, his gaze catching on Halden.
Your Royal Highness, he bows his head. We were not expecting such an esteemed guest.
We appreciate your hospitality, Viscount. Halden does that condescending head tilt of a nod that always grated on my nerves. Guess it still does. His hand rises to the small of my back and I stiffen. We were hoping to rest for the day, perhaps too, depending on the condition of the griffins, before continuing on to Devarelli.
Shadows rise up the back of my thigh, curling around my hip, and I sidestep toward Zayden, effectively losing Halden's hand in the process.
Still all right over there?
It would help if your fucking ex kept his hands to himself, he hisses, the shadow firmly gripping my hip.
Devarelli? Takaris asks, his eyebrows nearly hitting his hairline before his gaze swings my way.
You have the artifact.
My lips part.
We do, Halden answers for me. Gods, I've always hated that about him. Dane shoots me a look that borders on an eye roll, reminding me that he'd never been Halden's biggest fan.
Of course,
Takaris says slowly, his attention dropping to the shadows lingering at my hip.
Well then, let's get you comfortable.
He turns toward the palace in a flurry of brocaded fabric, and my shoulders dip with exhaustion as we follow him into the dining room.
Forgive the additional security. We are one of the only major cities left standing in the south,
he tells us as we round the end of the enormous table and through the doors into the airy palace. I'd almost forgotten just how breathtaking this place is. It's built for the movement of air, for beauty and art and light. Even the white marble floors shimmer, reflecting the dawn, just like the winding pools that flow through the space beyond the wide central staircase. The palace won't stand a chance should the Venon venture this far south. Whoever built it had to have known that.
Mira pauses at the base of the white steps, looking down at the black pillar barely visible in the level below us through the open staircase.
Like last time, it has quite the crowd milling around it.
Of course, with the number of flyers in residence, our rooms are limited, Takaris says, drawing the belt of his heavily brocaded robe tight as he starts up the steps.
Would you mind doubling up? We have a few rooms available on our top floor.
He looks over his shoulder at the landing.
With the exception of you, Your Highness, naturally we can accommodate private quarters for you.
Shit. There's no way I'll make it up 2 more flights of stairs when this one is already killing me. My knee protests every step, and I curse the humidity and keep climbing even though it feels like the ground rocks beneath my boots.
Naturally.
Halden's tone borders on terse. His fatigue is showing, and if he hasn't changed in the years we've been apart, it will only shorten his temper.
Your room remains empty as well, Ryerson. Or should I say your grace?
Takaris adds as we reach the floor we stayed on previously.
I can't help but notice you're not wearing the insignia of your rank.
He pauses in the middle of the wide hallway, bringing the entire group to a halt. I could just about cry as I realize we're right in front of the room Mira and I occupied during our last visit, and I spot the set of doors beyond that I know are Zayden's. How am I going to make it to the top floor?
Will you still keep me if I have to crawl up the stairs?
I ask Tarn. You're not crawling, Zayden answers.
Wrong pathway.
Gods, I really am in trouble.
Shiny things make good targets, Zayden says to Takaris from my left as Halden edges in on my right. And I've never been one to confuse a title with power. Oh, for fuck's sake. Is he really starting shit with Halden right now? I go to roll my eyes, then blink. Is this what Zayden went through when Kat showed up this past fall?
Riddick snorts behind me, and I hear the distinct sound of a smack against leather. No doubt Dane's hand against my squad mate's shoulder. I'm glad I can't see Mira's face. Amari knows she's exasperated as all hell back there.
But how am I to know on what authority you visit me?
Takaris turns toward us with a flourish, flashing his impossibly white teeth with a political smile.
As a lieutenant? Merely a rider. A professor. The Duke of Tirindor.
He taps his fingers together.
Or perhaps as the beloved of the one rarity I can't seem to convince to join my court.
His gaze falls to me, as if I need the reminder of his proposal to join his collection as his on-call guard dog in return for the privilege of growing old with Zayden and our dragons in the peace of his estate in the Isles.
That offer still stands.
As does my answer. I sway slightly and breathe deeply to beat back the darkening edges of my vision. I need rest, and I need it now. This time, the shadows at my hips are supportive instead of territorial, and when I glance down, they're so thin they blend into my leathers, nearly impossible to see.
Thank you.
What authority do I hold here? Let's ask our prince. What do you say, Your Royal Highness? He levels a look that could wither a fucking tree on Halden. Apprehension prickles the back of my neck. I'm not sure I understand the question. Halden's jaw ticks and his fists clench.
His temper could trigger your power, I warn Zayden, as Takaris smiles with pure glee at the obvious mayhem he's created.
His temper is exactly what I'm counting on.
Zayden drops his focus to the royal insignia.
You understand completely. Am I here as a professor, or the Duke, or...
Obviously, you're a fucking duke, Halden snaps. Llewellyn made sure of it, didn't he? The second most powerful title in the god's damn kingdom goes to a Ryerson of all bloodlines.
Don't be an ass, I start, but the shadows tug gently in a bid for silence, so I give it to him.
So I'm not here with the authority of a professor,
Zayden clarifies, masterfully ignoring Halden's blatant insult.
You have no authority. Halden seethes, color infusing his cheeks as he steps towards Zayden, his boots nearly reaching mine in the process. I am the ranking officer here.
Zayden, he's going to blow. He'll swing.
Walls, mirrors, tables, breakables, whatever's close, really. There was a reason guards never volunteered to be assigned to Halden. The same reason Alec had been such a bully and Cam, Arik, had avoided them both as much as possible.
So, not a professor.
Zayden's eyes narrow, and my whole body tries to sway, held upright by Zayden's shadows.
No! Halden's shout echoes down the hallway. Not a fucking professor!
Just wanted to clear that up, Zayden interrupts, then lifts me into his arms.
We'll see you once we're rested.
He takes off past Akaris, striding down the hall.
What are you doing? I hiss.
Doubling up as ordered, Zayden says, throwing open the doors to his room and then kicking them shut once we're through.
I cannot believe you just did that.
I slide down the length of his body and ignore the way mine ignites as he grips my hips and turns, pinning me against the door. It's blissfully solid behind my back.
Really?
He lowers his head to mine. Of all the things I've done, that's the one you can't believe? His voice softens, and he lifts his fingers to the side of my neck.
That's what I thought. Your pulse is racing.
I counted at least twice that you almost collapsed out there. He lowers his head to mine.
Did you really want to crawl up the stairs?
No, I admit.
Now you don't have to.
He presses a kiss to my forehead.
You just rode for 2 straight days with only 12 hours of rest.
I knew you needed to get off your feet and lie down. And I could have just given you my room, but selfishly, I look up at him.
I'm done sleeping in a bed that doesn't have you in it.
His thumb strokes along my pulse. Hope ignites in my chest. If he's willing to sleep in the same bed again, then maybe there's a chance he'll eventually trust himself enough to put his hands on me. And not just because he's jealous that Halden exists.
I'm good with that.
I'm rewarded with a hint of a smile, then swept up against his chest, the rhythm of his heart a perfect drum beneath my ear.
I feel like shit.
Zayden is slowly losing pieces of himself, and we're 1,000 miles from Besgaeth, yet that steady beat makes everything somehow tenable. It feels so right to be in his arms.
Because it is, he says, holding me tighter.
I blink and pull back to look at him.
I didn't say that out loud.
His brow furrows.
Then you must have thought it down the bond because I wasn't pushing into your intentions.
My heart races for a different reason.
No, but maybe?
Or your signet is growing. His eyes flare. Someone knocks at the door.
Fuck,
Zayden mutters, and I push against his chest.
Don't be. Let me down.
I'm facing whoever's on the other side of that door on my feet.
Stubborn.
He sets me down, then locks his forearm across my ribs to hold me upright as I face forward.
Ready?
I nod, and his arm twists along my left side. The gold-handled door opens, revealing Takaris. His two guards a respectable distance behind him. The Viscount's knowing gaze jumps between Zayden and me, but he doesn't bother with pithy commentary.
Make it quick, Zayden orders without explanation.
The prince cannot arrive in a basket, Takaris says, folding his hands in front of him and wrinkling his nose in distaste.
It is unseemly for royalty, and in a culture that values rare items, shrewd trades, and luxury, he'll never be granted an audience if he is seen as the item being delivered.
What do you propose? I ask, ignoring the sinking in my chest and the lightning in my head.
It's a 2-day journey by my fastest ship,
Takaris says, his brow furrowing as he studies me.
Which would make it, what, a 12-hour flight due south?
We estimate 16 with the Griffins and what your texts have provided about historical wind patterns, I answer, blinking back the darkness. It's been a long time since I pushed myself this hard, and fuck, am I paying for it.
I'll leave within the hour with the prince, Takaris offers. It appears you may need the rest.
She's fine, Zayden interrupts. I'm the one feeling a little clingy. I bite back a smile.
Right.
Takaris laces his fingers. I suggest you land at my estate on the northern coast about 12 hours after we'll arrive. It's about 10 miles east of the capital, though they measure distance in leagues, I interrupt. I read everything you sent, and everything my father wrote.
Excellent. The rest of the shoreline is rather, shall we say, defended, and I'll need to prepare the king for the arrival of dragons, or we'll return home with fewer of them.
My stomach pitches.
Trust me, our riot will return intact.
There's an edge of warning in Zayden's tone, and his forearm flexes.
I'm already worried about one hot-headed aristocrat, Takaris chides. Should I add a second to that list?
They come for our dragons, and it's not the aristocrat they'll be dealing with. Zayden's voice drops to that lethal calm that's a touch more terrifying than a shout.
Tell me you'll help control him. Takaris's gaze lands on mine.
I lift my chin. What makes you think he's the one you'd have to worry about?
Takaris sighs. I'll see that you have a map.
He brings his laced fingers to his chin.
You are prepared to lose your abilities when you cross the ocean?
We are, Zayden replies.
Definitely prepared to get a second of relief.
It will be fascinating to see if your powers reemerge once on land.
And you've brought the requested artifact for the audience? Takaris asks.
Halden's carrying it. He'll be taking the audience, I answer. This one time, Halden's enormous ego works in our favor. His insistence on being the only Navarian to meet with the king frees Zayden and gives us time to seek out the merchant my father mentioned.
Excellent, Takaris nods.
A word to the wise, he glances between us. I may collect rarities, but King Cortlin absconds with them. Do not wander off from each other. Do not advertise what a rare jewel you are.
And at all costs,
do not make a deal you cannot keep.
Nearly 24 hours later, my access to magic fades to all but a trickle at the edge of the coast as we fly over by the colors of dawn, trading power for sunlight. The loss is stunning, immeasurable in a way that, for an instant, makes me pity Jack Barlow. For the first time since the night Taryn and Endarna channeled to me, I feel small, naked even, stripped of the power that's come to not only embolden me over the last year, but define me. A shivering chill sweeps over my skin with the next gust of wind, and Endarna shrieks high above. My head whips in her direction as the sound echoes from those around us. Taryn drops unexpectedly, his wing beats faltering, and I fall forward, fumbling for the saddle's pommels. My hands make impact, jarring my wrists but catching my body weight just before my stomach makes contact as Taryn levels out over the ocean.
Are you all right?
I scan the sky for Endarna.
Startled. We draw on magic for strength, Taryn explains. I hadn't realized how dependent we truly are.
Endarna sinks rapidly on our right, her wings beating a furious but futile pace.
Hook on, Taryn orders.
I'm quite capable. She loses altitude with every second, plummeting toward the rippling water beneath us.
I have no desire to scent salted scales. Once you're wet, you're on your own, he warns,
then picks up his head, swiveling it back and forth in a reptilian manner.
What's wrong? I ask.
He dives toward Endarna without warning, and her sigh of acceptance comes out with a huff of a snarl as his shoulders tighten. And I hear the metallic click of the harness locking into place. Her added weight makes him dip for a breath of a second, and then his massive wings beat harder, lifting us toward the riot. Endarna is suspiciously quiet.
Taryn?
I prompt, my stomach souring with unease.
I can't speak with Segale.
He clips out each word.
Or any of the others. Our communications have been severed.
I reach for the glittering onyx bond, but even though Tarn is still there, Zayden isn't. We're already cut off. An excerpt from Subjugated, The Second Uprising of the Krovlin People by Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale. It was whispered in academic circles that Cordon had supplied troops and weaponry for the Second Krovlin Uprising. But the research has led me across the Arctile Ocean to Devarelli, known to our kingdom as the Treacherous Isle of Merchants, who, to my surprise, may not have been the source of the arms, but perhaps the broker. Chapter 22. Holy shit, it's hot here, and by my estimates, it must only be around 9 o'clock in the morning as we approach an endless line of white beaches, preceded by splotches of alternating turquoise and aqua waters. Soft green hills rise directly behind the beach, dotted with stone structures. The perplexing color reminds me of the last batch of wool when the weaver's dye has lost its potency. It's muted, almost faded, and its lack of color is made obvious by the contrast of the water. The closer we fly, the farther forward I lean in my seat, wholly, completely fascinated. The hills aren't dotted at all. That's the city, isn't it? Hidden in the trees. My fingers curl in excitement around the pommels of the saddle. The area is a thriving port with 4 central piers and several smaller ones.
It appears to be.
Before we get close enough to make out the people, Tarn banks left, taking us east.
Let me out of this thing before anyone sees,
Andarna demands.
Not until we're out of range of those crossbolts.
Tarn looks pointedly toward a long stone wall a quarter of the way up the first hill, armed with a dozen of the largest crossbolts I've ever seen, all loaded with shining metallic tips.
Dragon killers.
For once, Andarna doesn't argue. Given this is an isle dedicated to peace, they're certainly prepared for war. My stomach tenses. It's been centuries since any Navarian has stepped foot on this isle. And if we've overestimated the Viscount's sway with the king, there's every chance those crossbolts will head in our direction. We fly between the beach and a barrier island, where the water is a breathtaking shade of blue I've never seen. And I can't help but stare, trying to commit it to memory as we slowly descend to 100, then 50 feet above the ground. Reading about this place has in no way truly prepared me to see it. Despite the exhaustion, I don't want to so much as blink for fear of missing a single thing. Although after flying all night, I'm more than prepared to modify this saddle even more for sleeping when we get back to Basgaiath.
According to the map you were given, the estate ahead belongs to Takaris,
Tarn says as we pass by a grouping of elegant manors on the mainland, each with its own dock and a ship that announces its owner's status and wealth. Tarn shifts his shoulders, and the click of the harness sounds a second before Andarna appears off his right wing, hers beating double time to keep up. A group of creatures darts beneath us in the water, jumping into the air in a series of graceful leaps that almost make up for the flurry of people yelling and running back into their homes as we fly over.
I wonder what they taste, Andarna starts.
No, my protest catches me by surprise. They're dolphinum, and they're just too pretty to be your snack, even prettier than the drawings I've seen.
You're going soft, Andarna snorts.
We touch down in the sand in front of a sprawling 2-story manor that reminds me of a smaller version of Takaris's palace in Cordon. Its tall white pillars leave a portion of the structure open to the ocean breeze, but the thick stone walls that surround the rest tell me it's weathered storms here, too. Palm trees, tall, wispy things with broad leaves of the same muted pale green adorning their tops, line a path to the house,
and I check to make sure that's indeed the standard of cordon flying on a docked ship before I dismount, taking the extra pack we've kept with Taryn until now. The sand is so fine, I can't help but drop down and run my fingers through it with a smile. It's nothing like the rocky texture along the river at Basgaiath or the coarse, grainy beach of Cordon. This makes me want to strip my boots off and walk barefoot. Andarna lifts her claws and shakes it beside me, sending grains of sand flying in a cloud as the others land in a flurry of activity around us.
It's going to get between my scales.
And now you understand why I didn't let you eat that tortoise, Taryn mutters, his head perpetually swiveling, taking in our surroundings. We'll need to hunt before we fly back, and we're no longer alone.
A middle-aged man stands in the doorway of Takaris's manor, his short-sleeved, belted white tunic and matching pants contrasting his brown skin as his arms tremble, his mouth hanging open while he stares at Taryn and Andarna.
I'll figure out where to do that without causing a war. I stand up as Riddick stomps forward, then startle when Atrum roars. The Devarelli man screams and runs back into the house.
Great first impression, I mutter, brushing the sand off my palm.
Andarna snorts, then prances off toward the water, her wings tucked in tight.
Do not go any deeper than your claws, Taryn lectures, his tail nearly taking out a tree when he pivots to watch her go. I swear if you get in over your head, I'll let you drown.
Atrum roars again, getting everyone's attention, including Taryn's.
I don't know what you're saying, Riddick turns toward Atrum.
The brown sword tail opens his mouth and roars louder, blowing back Riddick's dark brown hair and covering my friend in a layer of goopy saliva.
Gross.
Riddick slowly lifts his hands and scrapes the slime off his face.
Yelling at me doesn't help. It's like shouting in a language I don't speak.
A vice of foreboding clamps down on my chest, and my gaze swings toward Taryn, then past him to where Sigale and Tiny survey our surroundings restlessly. Mira walks our way, rubbing the back of her neck, but Zayden stands at the edge of the water, facing away from the estate.
I think it's just us, I say to Taryn, spinning slowly to take it all in.
Just us how? He asks.
Kira rakes her claws through the sand, and Kat is on her knees next to her, holding her face in her hands while Drake kneels at her side. Sova, his griffin, shakes his silver head back and forth like he's trying to clear it. Kath guards the west point of the property, his tail flicking in agitation. And Dane looks down as he walks our way.
Something's off with everyone.
I think we're the only ones who can speak to one another.
My feet sink into the sand as I trudge my way over to Mira, and I rip open the buttons of my jacket as the heat starts to cook me from inside my leathers.
Can you talk to Tiny?
She shakes her head. We lost the connection as soon as we left the continent.
I swallow hard, then lower my voice. I can still speak to Taryn and Andarna.
She blinks, then looks over the group quickly.
From the state of everyone else, I'd say you're alone in that department.
Her brow furrows.
Do you think it's because you're bonded to two? Or is it Andarna?
I shake my head, my focus straying to Zayden's back.
I don't know.
Either way, I'm glad you still have the connection. She gently squeezes my shoulders.
Being cut off from magic is
disorienting, I grimace.
Yes, she nods. But losing the bond?
Her face puckers for a second before she masks the emotion.
Well, I guess you'd know since they shoved that serum down your throat.
Not only is everyone going to be on edge, it'll make coordinating anything a bitch considering they're cut off from each other, I say, glancing up at Taryn, who's backed away to take a position that puts him equally between Sigale and Darna and me.
Guess we'll have ample opportunity to try these out. Mira swings her pack from her shoulder, then retrieves several leather pouches before picking the one marked with a circular protection rune I don't recognize and replacing the rest. Trissa sent these as a test to see if runes will work out here. She unbuttons the pouch and hands me a palm-sized slice of what appears to be lilac-colored quartz, tempered with the same rune that labels the leather. That one is supposed to shield you from sunlight. Carry it while we're here for me, would you? She lifts her brows. Quietly, of course. I nod and slip it into my pocket. Having some, or any, form of power out here would put us on a more familiar footing. But it opens the door to a kind of trade I'm not sure any of us wants to contemplate.
You made it! Takaris shouts with glee from the doorway, his arms outstretched in ostentatious welcome as he walks toward us in a fuchsia tunic embroidered in heavy gold.
Prince Halden hasn't awakened yet, but I was able to secure an emergency meeting with a chancellor to the king upon our arrival last night, and he'll be thrilled to know that your creatures may hunt in the valleys 3 leagues south of here, where there is an abundance of wild game. Humans are not to be on the menu.
Understood, I tell him, and immediately turn toward Tarn. I'd rather you go now, so you're at full strength, than chance something going wrong.
Agreed.
He arches his neck and lets out a short bark of a sound that makes me lift my brows, but does the trick of getting everyone's attention.
Do not die while I am gone.
I'll do my best. He bends a little deeper than usual, given the sand, then launches skyward, his wings creating a gust of wind that weaponizes the sand around us. I throw my forearm up to protect my face and leave it there for the next few seconds as the others follow Tarn's lead. When I open my eyes, it's just us humans on the beach, riders dressed in black, flyers in brown leathers, gawking Devarelli on either side of what appears to be Tikaris's property line, and one rather pompous viscount.
The prince has an audience with his majesty this afternoon, so I'm assuming you'd all like to rest before you...
Takaris cocks his head to the side.
I suppose do nothing, since King Cortland will only speak to aristocracy.
He crinkles his nose at Riddick.
You need a bath.
We need horses.
Riddick scoops a fingerful of slime out of his ear and shakes it off his finger.
I'm sorry, Takaris steps out of the slime's path.
Violet wants to visit the market. Something about buying books, Dane answers as he catches up, taking a spot to Riddick's right. Takaris nods.
Of course. You'll keep a low profile?
As low as possible, I agree. He tells us where to find our assigned rooms, and after we thank him, I head toward the water. My boots sink in the sand with every step until I reach the zone where it firms just above the waterline. Zayden stands with his feet apart, swords strapped to his back and arms crossed, but when my shoulder brushes his elbow, I look up to find his face completely, totally relaxed. I close my eyes tight, then reopen them just to be sure I'm not imagining things.
Nope.
He's really staring out at the water like we're in the valley above Ryerson House and not in enemy territory, completely cut off from magic.
Hey, I say gently.
Hey.
He tilts his head down toward mine and gives me a soft but real smile. I almost ask him how he is, since he can't talk to Zagael, and our own bond is blocked. But it seems like a shitty thing to do after that smile. Everyone is heading up to take naps before we ride out to find the merchant. Halden is set to meet the king at 3, so we can get a good 4 hours of sleep in if you want.
I'm going to stay out here for a little bit.
You go. He turns toward me and cups the back of my neck.
You need the rest, and definitely need to get out of the sun for a bit. Your nose is turning pink.
Takaris gave us the same room.
because he values his life. He tucks the loose strands of my braid behind my ears. Get some sleep. You need it. I'll be up in a bit. Do you want me to sit out here with you? His grin deepens. When you clearly need to rest? No, love. Though I appreciate the offer. It's hard to explain. But I'm just going to take a little time to myself to soak in this view. He grabs my hand and brings it to his chest, where his heart pounds in a steady rhythm that feels slightly more relaxed than it was in Corden, than it has been in weeks, really. Can you feel it? It's slower, I whisper. There's no magic here. He tugs me against him. No power, no lure, no taunting reminder that I can save everyone if I just reach for it and take what's offered. It's only peace. For the first time since fetching the luminary, I seriously debate Takaris's offer.
An excerpt from Subjugated, The Second Uprising of the Krovlin People by Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale. The uprising suddenly failed overnight on December 13th, 433 AU, in what has been called the Midnight Massacre. The foreign troops disappeared, and the rebels were killed in their beds by Peromish forces. It is not their disappearance that strikes this scholar as particularly vicious, but their obvious betrayal. There is a saying in Devarelli, the word is the blood. When they make a trade, broker a deal, it is considered law. I cannot help but wonder what part of the deal the Krovlin rebels did not uphold. Chapter 23.
This is a ridiculous way to travel, Riddick says for the dozenth time, hauling himself upright in the saddle after slipping yet again as our horses navigate the uneven stone streets of Matias, Devarelli's capital city. I smother a laugh, but Kat doesn't offer Riddick the same kindness from two rows back with Mira as we ride the tree-covered fairways. We're arranged mostly in pairs with the exception of Drake, who is solo ahead of Zayden and me.
The city is even more stunning than I imagined from the air. Built under the canopy of enormous trees, only its tallest structures are visible when flying. The rest feels like a hidden treasure. And we haven't even journeyed up the hill where the palace and Halden is. The roads have been primarily residential until now, with structures far and evenly spaced, growing closer together the nearer we come to the ports and city center. And in the last mile, every single one of them has been built out of stone.
I'm sorry, but I find it hard to believe that a dragon rider draws the line at a horse, Kat says with another laugh as we pass what appears to be a tea shop, judging by the painted sign outside the door.
Hey, horses bite, Riddick says over his shoulder, and a woman jumps away at the sight of us, placing a palm over the neckline of her embroidered white tunic.
And dragons do what, exactly? Drake calls back.
You'll never know, since you'll never be allowed to ride one, Mira snaps in a bored tone before returning to her usual side-to-side perimeter sweep. She's been on alert since we left the manor, even though I've assured her Tarn's within range and he can set this whole place on fire within minutes if I call for him. What we really need is a freaking communication rune for the others, if such a thing exists. Drake's eyes narrow on Mira, then Zayden, whose mouth has curved into a smirk.
I am surprised you didn't fight me for the lead position, Ryerson.
Zayden scoffs, and the smirk transforms into a smile as we pass under a patch of dappled sunlight. I stare at him like it's first year all over again.
He's in a short-sleeved uniform top like the rest of us, bearing those gorgeously toned arms. But it's really the relaxed posture, the ease of his smile that have me utterly transfixed, and I can admit, a little confuddled. Zayden Ryerson is a lot of things, but happy isn't usually one of them.
It's perfectly fine if you die first, Cordella. I'm exactly where I want to be.
Then the man fucking winks at me, and I almost fall off my damned horse. I tighten my thighs on instinct to keep from sliding out of the saddle, and the sable mare prances beneath me before I remember to relax. The dizziness has always been worse in the heat, and it's definitely not doing me any favors today.
See? Violet prefers dragons too, Riddick says.
I'm fine. I roll my shoulders to keep my pack and its very precious cargo in place.
She's always been a good rider, Dane argues on my behalf.
Did you two ride a lot when you were younger?
Zayden asks as we pass by a tavern, and more than one mug of ale spills onto white tunics at the outdoor tables at the sight of us. My jaw drops and my head whips in his direction. Leather creaks, and when I glance back, sure enough, Mira is leaning forward in her saddle.
What?
Zayden looks at me, then lifts his brows and glances back at the others. Kat stares at him like he's grown another head. Dane's wearing two lines between his brows like he can't quite figure out if this is a trick question. And Riddick grins like he's got front row tickets to a play. Zayden's gaze jumps to mine for a second before returning to the road as we take the fork to the right, leading to the market and port, according to the rather remarkable signage jammed between the cobblestone and a large tree.
Am I not allowed to ask about your childhood?
No, I blurt. Of course you are.
It's just that you usually act like I didn't grow up with her, Dane answers casually. Like we weren't best friends.
I'm so fucking glad I got on this horse, Riddick says, gripping his reins tighter.
I send a look his way that I hope tells him I'm reevaluating my decision to put him in this squad in the first place.
But to answer your question, Dane continues, just as at ease on his horse as Zayden is. Yes, we rode whenever our parents' duty stations allowed for it. Not the years they were up in Luceris, of course.
Fuck, that was cold, Mira says.
It was, I agree, cringing at the memory. Riding was hard on me when I was out of practice, and falling always sucked. But it gave me a sense of awareness of my body, too. What about you? I ask Zayden as we curve onto a bustling street.
I think I rode before I walked.
He flashes me a quick smile.
It's probably one of the things I missed most once I crossed the parapet, actually. Horses go where you ask them to for the most part. Segale?
He glances up at the trees, as if he can see her in the sky above us, a look of longing on his face.
She doesn't really give a shit where I want to go. I'm just along for the ride. Man, do I feel that, Dane mutters, and I laugh.
Look alive, Drake calls back. And the mood of the squad instantly shifts as the street grows crowded with horses, wagons, and pedestrians carrying baskets in their arms and strapped to their backs. The only blades I see are the ones we carry. Stone shops line both sides of the congested double-wide streets. Their doors are open to the breeze. Their wares and produce displayed on carts in front under vibrant cloth awnings for what looks to be a mile straight ahead. And from what I read, I know this area branches off to the south into a gold and spice market, and farther up the hill where the financial sector perches like an overlord. We're a half mile off the beach, but the scents of salt and fish are thick in the air. And I understand why business is done under the canopy of the trees. I can't begin to imagine the smell or how quickly things would spoil in the sun in this climate. Everywhere I look, there's a purchase being haggled over. A fruit I've never tasted, a flower I've never smelled, a bird I've never heard.
It's a sensory feast, and I consume it like a starved woman.
Anyone feel like our home is a completely dreary shithole? Riddick asks as traffic pauses us outside a cloth merchant, and I find myself staring at a bolt of shimmering black silk so diaphanous it's almost silver. It wouldn't last a day against the dragon scale armor currently covering my torso.
Speak for yourself, Zayden says, swinging his leg over and dismounting next to me.
Aracia is the second most beautiful thing I've ever seen. He hands me his reins, turning those gorgeous gold-flecked onyx eyes into weapons capable of melting the underwear straight off my body as he looks up at me. And my home is the first. Yeah, I flat out liquefy.
You're laying it on thick, Ryerson, but I still smile when I take the reins.
I'm going to ask about our merchant. Don't leave without me. He glances back at Dane.
Let's go, Krovlish.
Offering me another precious grin, he disappears into the store, followed quickly by Dane.
Is that the same guy?
Drake asks Kat, turning around in the saddle.
That cannot possibly be the same fucking guy.
I try not to look, but fail, and when I glance over my shoulder, I catch a glimpse of her shrugging and quickly looking away.
Maybe this is who he could have been if his dad hadn't led a whole rebellion and fucked him over by getting executed and having him thrown into the quadrant and making him responsible for all the marked ones at the age of what, 17?
Riddick muses. Yeah, I agree, my eyes on the door. That. And yet, if all of it hadn't happened, would we still be us? Or is the miracle of our relationship the result of a precise combination of tragedies that broke us both so completely that when we collided, we became something entirely new?
Or it could just be that he loves Violet, so he's not a dick to her,
Mira says, eyeing a puckered brow Devarelli man who scurries back into a dressmaker's shop at the first sight of us, dragging a woman along with him.
Guess we're more visible than we thought. We're the only ones in black, I mutter.
Firebringers,
the man accuses in the common tongue, then slams the door shut, rattling the glass.
Rude, Riddick adjusts in his saddle.
And wrong, Kat mutters. Some of us just want to fuck with your feelings, not burn your house to the ground. I huff a laugh, but Riddick full-on snorts. Zayden strides through the cloth merchant's door with Dane, tucking a black velvet pouch into the front left pocket of his uniform as he comes down the 3 stone steps.
She's a dealer of rare books, 2 streets up the hill.
Stunned, I hand him back his reins and he mounts quickly. It can't be that easy.
It can, he says, tapping his pocket. We don't share a currency, but gemstones seem to speak in every language.
He looks over his shoulder.
Good job, Atos.
Was that a compliment? What the fuck is going on?
Dane asks, his gaze flying to mine.
Did you give him something?
I shake my head, and Drake starts us forward. Firebringer is hurled as an insult in our direction more than a few times as we make our way down the rows of shops and up the 2 streets where Zayden and Dane were directed. The flurry of activity dwindles from the urgency of a daily produce and goods mercantile district to more varied and niche shops by the time we reach the 2nd street. When we stop in front of Tomes and Tales, there's ample room next to the trunk of an enormous tree for the horses to wait. The shop itself is 2 stories, built in various shades of graystone, and unlike the streets below, none of its sides touch the buildings around it. From the outside, it looks to be the same size as the bookstore I visited in Caldeer with Dad. A little larger than the library in the Riders' Quadrant, but nowhere even an eighth of the archives.
You're on, Zayden says from the ground, reaching up for me.
I swing my leg over the sable mare and dismount into his arms, noting how he takes his delicious time sliding me down the length of his body. He keeps our eyes locked, and the heat I find there, the need that flares as my hands drift down his chest, make my breath catch. I reach for our bond out of reflex to tell him how much I want him back in my bed, and my hands fist the fabric of his uniform when I remember it's blocked here. I miss the bond, I whisper before I can think better of it.
Me too. But you don't have to say what you're thinking for me to know, he whispers,
his hands slipping from my waist to my hips.
I can read it in every line of your body. Your eyes are a dead giveaway, too.
Under my fists, his heartbeat accelerates.
Always have been. You have no idea how many times I almost fucked up on the sparring mat when I caught you watching me.
He says this now, when I can't just drag him into the nearest room and lock the door? Suddenly, the last 6 weeks feels like an eternity.
I swear to Amari, you two get 1 inch closer and I'm going to throw a bucket of water on you, Mira warns, breaking the spell.
I fall forward, leaning my forehead on Zayden's chest right between my fists, and feel his laughter rumble as he closes his arms around me.
Do riders get nicknames once they earn their wings? Drake questions Mira. Because I'm pretty sure yours would be Killjoy. Are we doing this or not? Mira asks, clearly ignoring him.
I nod and sigh with resignation as I step out of Zayden's arms.
Riddick, Drake, Kat, please stay with the horses and be ready to run if this goes badly. Mira, Dane, and Zayden, you're with me. Hopefully, we'll be out quickly.
Riddick dusts off his summerweight uniform and gathers the reins.
I'll be nearby.
I know, I reply. The reassuring way he said it makes my brow furrow.
What?
Mira asks, spotting my face. Just wondering if we did the right thing letting Halden go by himself to see the king. My stomach sinks as I consider every way it could go wrong.
Didn't exactly give us a choice, Riddick says. Cortland only allows aristocrats to enter.
Even if he did, we can't be in two places at once. Mira nods toward the bookshop.
Right.
None of us draws a blade, but our hands remain loose and ready as we walk the short cobblestone path to the stairred entrance midway down the south side of the shop. Mira enters first, mainly because no one seems to want to argue with her, and Zayden follows me in last, mainly because I don't think he'll ever trust anyone without a rebellion relic to ever truly cover his back. The scents of dust and parchment fill the thick air as soon as our boots hit the hardwood floor, and I immediately understand why there isn't another shop on the side. Windows stretch from floor to ceiling, allowing natural light to pour in over the rows of bookshelves taller than I can possibly reach that jut out lengthwise from the wall on my right. Matching their 3-foot-long counterparts on our left, leaving a lengthy, clear aisle to a single counter. The titles are stacked haphazardly, but none touch the backs of the shelves, allowing for air to circulate.
It's beautiful, but hot as hell.
If I'd thought the heat outside the shop was stifling, then the temperature inside, without the breeze, is truly oppressive. Sweat immediately beads beneath my armor and along the side of my neck. There are a few customers browsing toward the narrow staircase in the back, and a woman who appears to be in her 60s with a pert nose and a slicked back salt and pepper bun behind the counter, licking her umber fingers every few seconds as she flips through the pages of a ledger. But I don't see anyone in the stacks to the right, so I nod toward the counter when Mira looks back at me. We make our way down the aisle that opens into a small seating arrangement, and Dane keeps his eye on the customers in the back, a pair of men who have definitely taken notice of us. I glance over my shoulder as we approach the counter, finding Zayden has slipped behind the last shelf on the left and is currently leaned against the wall, wearing his usual expression of apathetic boredom.
Go figure. He's found what seems to be one of the only patches of shadow in the place to wait while I sort out whatever my father sent me here to find.
Dane moves to the edge of the counter, earning the shopkeeper's attention and placing himself between Mira and the customers, while Mira backs herself to the far edge of the seating group, setting a perimeter. In a bookstore. I manage to keep from rolling my eyes. The shopkeeper's gaze darts from Dane to Mira to me before she closes the ledger and places it under the counter. Dane, could you ask her? I set one hand on the counter for balance.
I speak the common tongue, the woman says. We are educated here in Devarelli.
I blink. Right, well, I was just wondering if you happen to know anyone by the name of Norell. Her eyes flare, and my stomach jumps into my throat when she glances over my right shoulder. Mira.
Firebringers! Someone shouts.
I draw two blades and the breath it takes to whip toward my sister. Two assailants charge from the back shelves, the ones I'd previously foolishly thought empty, and Mira sighs when one of them, a woman who looks to be my age, lifts a serrated dagger at her. If we have to, Mira says, drawing her own as the older man, someone closer to Brennan's build and age with spiky black hair and what seems to be a standard issue white and gold tunic, runs down the aisle. Rage fills his eyes as he rushes toward me, two longer serrated blades pointed in my direction. I flip one of my daggers to the tip and prepare to throw, angling my body so the shopkeeper remains within sight. The guy will be here in 4 seconds. 3, 2. Zayden takes a single step, then kicks a large armchair straight into the man's path. It hits him square in the stomach and his breath gushes out, but he regroups quickly, turning a glare in Zayden's direction with raised blades.
You don't want to do that.
Zayden shakes his head. The guy shouts a battle cry, then draws back his right arm and I flick my wrist. The dagger lands in his shoulder and the man howls as crimson streaks down his white tunic and his blade falls to the floor.
I warned you, Zayden says as the man hits his knees. Your error was changing your assessment to targeting me as the threat and letting your eyes off her.
He takes his time walking over to the man as Mira punches her assailant in the face, knocking the woman unconscious. Then Zayden plucks the blades from the man like they're toys.
I knew some of you carried blades. There is no society in the world that doesn't keep some kind of cutting tool, and eventually, well, we all cut, don't we?
Dane clicks his tongue and I turn in his direction to find both his dagger and sword out, the shorter of the blades pointed at the shopkeeper and the longer at the customers.
I would stay back, he tells the men who have drawn their own serrated daggers. In fact, if there's a back door, I would find it and I would leave.
They scurry to do so. The injured man falls forward, catching himself on his good hand before collapsing on his stomach, and Zayden leans over him.
This is going to hurt,
Zayden warns before retrieving my dagger from his shoulder. To his credit, the man doesn't scream or complain when Zayden wipes the blade clean on the back of his white tunic.
You really shouldn't raise a blade if you're not prepared to receive one.
Mira sheathes her daggers and steps over the unconscious woman.
Well, that was annoying. Are you protecting someone, or do you just really hate riders?
She asks the shopkeeper, who has backed herself into the corner as far as she possibly can.
Only firebringers in this store looking for Norell,
the shopkeeper answers. Protecting something. Got it. The stairs creak, and the angle of Dane's sword changes as our heads swing collectively. The man groans, and out of the corner of my eye, I see him struggle to get off the floor.
No, no. Staying down is a safer bet for everyone involved, Zayden warns him. She only wounded you, but I'll kill you if you take another step toward her, and it turns out that's bad for international relations. I glance his way as someone descends the steps, and he arches his scarred eyebrow. I'm giving diplomacy a try. Not sure it's for me, though. The man goes utterly limp.
Dane hesitates as a hunched figure rounds the end of the staircase. The shopkeeper yells something in Krovlish, and I blink.
Did she just call her?
Mom, Dane confirms with a nod. She said, no, Mom, save yourself.
We're not here to kill anyone, I tell the shopkeeper as her mother walks into the light, leaning heavily on a walking cane. Her hair is silver, and the lines of her face have deepened with time. But she has the same pert nose as her daughter, the same deep brown eyes and round face. You're Norel, I guess. Dane lowers his sword as she approaches, then sheathes it as she completely skirts around him, taking in the scene of what I assume is her shop. She studies Zayden through thick glasses, then Dane, Mira, and finally me, her gaze lingering on my hair before she finally nods.
And you must be Asher Sorengale's daughter, here to collect the books he wrote for you.
My heart stops. Recovered unsent correspondence of General Lilith Sorengale.
She won't understand why you've kept her in the dark. You left too soon, left too many of your plans unfinished. Now we can only hope the bond between our daughters is strong enough to endure the paths they've chosen. They'll need each other to survive.
Chapter 24.
Books, I whisper, my fingers curling around the dagger I realize is still in my left hand.
Norel tilts her head.
I did not stutter.
She looks pointedly at the armchair.
Put that back in its place.
Zayden lifts a brow but does as she asks, then crosses the small section of the room and sheathes my dagger at my hip.
Thank you, I whisper.
He brushes a kiss over my temple, then takes the empty spot at my right side.
Get off the floor, Urson. You're bleeding everywhere. Take your sister to the back and wake her up. Did I not say you were ill-prepared to carry a weapon?
Norel lectures as she avoids the spilled blood.
Please forgive my grandchildren. They took our task of protecting the books from any riders who aren't you. A little too seriously.
She sinks into the chair.
Thank you, young man,
she says to Zayden, then gives him a second look before glancing at Dane.
My, the continent does have some fine-looking men.
A corner of Zayden's mouth quirks upward, and I can't help but silently agree with her.
Mom, the shopkeeper rushes to her side, no doubt still worried we'll attack her mother.
Urson hurries to do Norel's bidding, helping his sister off the floor as she reluctantly comes to from Mira's last punch. They disappear into the back, and I almost feel bad for them until I remember that they attacked us.
I'm 93, Leona. I'm not dead, she waves her daughter off. Or, what is it you Amoralis say? I have not yet met Malik. He's your god of death. Is he not?
My brow furrows at the unknown term. Amoralis. Isn't he everyone's god of death? Mira leans back against the nearest row of bookshelves. I shake my head. Devarelli don't worship gods.
It's why we're considered the most neutral of the Isles. Perfect for trade.
Norel shrugs.
What you call gods, we call science. What you call fate, we call coincidence. What you call the divine intervention of love, we call,
she flourishes her hand,
alchemy. Two substances combine to make something entirely new, not unlike what's between the two of you.
She glances between Zayden and me and sets her hand on her chest. My heart twists. If she only knew how close she was to my very thoughts earlier today. She wiggles her finger at Zayden.
I heard you saying you'd kill my grandson if he took another step toward your beloved, young man. How illogically, toxically romantic of you. Have to admit, that kind of confident violence isn't what I pictured when Asher talked about you, but the brown hair, those, I guess, their brown eyes, and how utterly smitten he predicted you two would eventually be for each other. Well, he described you almost perfectly, Deinatos.
Oh, fucking kill me now. My mouth opens, then shuts. Zayden raises both eyebrows and presses his lips between his teeth. Dane rubs the back of his neck. Mira snorts once, covers her mouth with her hand, then doubles over laughing.
I'm sorry, she forces out and straightens, quickly masking her face and clearing her throat. But she slips again, her shoulders shaking.
I can't. I just can't. I need a second.
She walks behind the row of shelves, hopefully to compose herself. My face feels like it's been blasted by dragon fire.
How would you like this to go? Dane asks me as Norell glances among the three of us, her silver brows knitting.
Just like it's gone for the last 18 months, Zayden answers, losing any and all trace of niceties he showed Dane an hour ago. Everyone assumes she'll wind up with you, but it's my last name she ends up wearing on her flight jacket in formation.
Seriously? Words absolutely fail me that he would go there. It was one time. Fine. Twice if I count the return trip from Samara after we got back together.
Glad to see you're feeling like yourself again. Dane leans back against the counter. But we don't have last names on our flight jackets.
And yet you get the fucking point. Zayden's jaw ticks.
Narelle's gaze narrows on Zayden through her thick lenses.
You aren't Dane.
Zayden shakes his head. I'm Dane. Dane raises his hand briefly.
And he's?
Narelle asks me.
Zayden Ryerson. I lift my chin as if I'm answering to my father for my choice.
And he's mine, even when he's being a possessive ass.
Finn Ryerson, son.
Narelle drums her gnarled fingertips on the armrest.
Asher certainly didn't predict that.
He would have if he'd ever met him. I reach for Zayden's hand and lace our fingers.
Our mother knew, Mira says, taking her place at the end of the bookshelf. She wasn't enthusiastic about it or anything, but she knew love when she saw it. But she certainly never told us about our father coming here.
She wouldn't have, would she?
Narelle shifts in her seat.
When did he die?
A little less than 3 years ago, I answer gently. His heart failed.
Narelle's face crumples for a few sorrowful breaths, but she nods through it, as if having a conversation with herself, then lifts her head again.
Your father risked all your lives to hide away his life's work with the sole purpose that you find it, Violet. He left the last of it with me, almost 4 years ago, with explicit instructions that you only be given it if you had attained the intelligence and understanding you would need to comprehend it.
I stiffen.
That's, Dane shakes his head.
That's Dad, Mira says slowly.
You've got this, Zayden squeezes my hand. I fight to swallow the sudden lump in my dry throat.
He told me to bring you the rarest item I possess. An ironic laugh bubbles up, and I thought, I shake my head, realizing the work we've gone through to haul the satchel all this way has been for nothing.
You thought it's Devrelli, so naturally we trade in goods, treasures.
Narelle folds her hands in her lap.
He meant my mind. I glance at Mira, but her gaze is locked on the floor.
That's why he said not to send another in my stead.
The books are only for you,
Narelle confirms, and Leona perches on the arm of her mother's chair.
I have three simple questions, and if you're capable of answering them, the books are yours.
Arrogant to think you have any right to keep something our father wrote for Violet based on your judgment. Mira's tone could grate stone.
It's fine, I assure her, refusing to waver even in this heat. Ask. Narelle shoots my sister a withering look and then turns her attention to me.
He left a manuscript for you. What is the title?
Subjugated, the Second Uprising of the Krovlin People by Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale, I answer. Which you already know that I know. How else would I be here? She taps her forefinger in obvious impatience.
In chapter 14, your father alludes to the Krovlin Uprising falling apart because of Devarelli, but does not go into specifics.
Her gaze skims over my black uniform.
Scribe, worth her wisdom, wouldn't have been satisfied with his speculation. So tell me, what's your hypothesis?
Out of everything in the book, that's what she asks?
Easy. Krovla didn't keep their part of whatever deal they made with Devarelli. Rather than lose their reputation, Devarelli withdrew their brokerage, hence the removal of the other Isle's troops. And then told the Peromish King Regent where to find the rebels. End of rebellion. I shrug.
Not good enough. She shakes her head and my stomach sinks. Why did it fall apart? What was brokered?
That's not fair, Dane starts. Narelle lifts a hand, demanding his silence.
She knows the answer.
I sigh. I have an idea. I just don't like being wrong. Or in this case, right.
You're among friends.
Her smile implies otherwise. Fine. Sweat drips down the back of my neck, but I gather up the courage to look like a fool. I think they promised dragons and couldn't deliver.
They what? Mira squawks.
Zayden tenses, and Dane pivots fully to face me, his eyes impossibly wide. But Narelle's slow smile tells me I'm either horrifically wrong or tragically right.
Present your proof,
she says in a tone that reminds me